I know a lot about drinking beer. I know very little about brewing beer, but it is a science.
Is there ever any danger, Sam, of anything blowing up in my kitchen if I decide to homebrew?
Do you have any, like, scars?
I have a lot of burns, which, you know, have left scars. You know, we deal with, like, a lot of hot liquid.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. It is Monday, the Monday after the Super Bowl. Welcome to the show. And there may be about 18.8 million Americans who called in sick today. But we are here and we are live. Jane Matinair, how you doing?
I am great. What a gorgeous day.
I know.
It's almost 50 degrees, folks.
It's a no-coat day.
Yeah.
Yesterday was kind of a no-coat day too.
Yeah. We're going to have these valleys now. Friday's going to be like 21 degrees. So enjoy.
Enjoy. Enjoy it while we have it. All right. Well, we have an absolutely stacked show today. I went to sleep early last night. I got up early this morning. I am prepped for this show. We have so many guests, and sometimes it's a little stressful when you have guests back to back, but, like, I am so excited for everyone we have today. So in the first hour at 11:30, there is a story out of Ohio that you may or may not have heard of, because I don't feel like it's getting the attention that it certainly deserves.
So not nearly.
East Palestine.
Palestine.
Is it Palestine? I thought it was Palestine.
I've heard
different pronunciations of it. Small Upper Ohio Valley town. And my buddy, John Russell, who is a Upper Ohio Valley guy, he's been on the show before. He has a newsletter called The Holler. He's also kind of in the same genre of me as far as makes TikToks on capitalism and wealth disparity and eating the rich, as they say. So he's been on the show before, but he snuck in past police blockades to go report on this, because apparently he doesn't qualify as the media, but because he's from the area, he knew the back roads to get in there. So he was there live when there was, at the press conference, another journalist got arrested for no apparent reason.
I saw that.
And they're already, authorities are already telling people who live there that they can go back. But this was poisonous, toxic waste that spilled in this, you know, kind of decrepit town, like so many of that part of Ohio is. John's going to be joining us at 11:30 to talk about his firsthand reporting and a litany of other, like, this isn't the first time this has happened in that area.
No.
And it's not the first time that it's kind of gone unreported in that area. And so I'm so excited to be able to talk to him and have him break it down for us. And then at 11:50, at the end of this hour, we are going to be talking to Dusty Weiss, who is the owner of PodCamp Media. He's been on the show before, too. Last time he was on, we talked about him going up in a fighter jet. But this time, while the Super Bowl for many is about the game, for marketers and advertisers, it's about the commercials.
Big time.
So he is here with his winners and losers from yesterday. But to kick off the show, you know, I thought we would talk about the Super Bowl. And it feels like there's a fair amount of, I don't know if I would go as far as controversies, but there's a variety of different points that we could debate that are up for debate this morning. Obviously, the game ended with a pretty controversial call, a pretty controversial holding call on the Eagles that may or may not have decided the game, because both the Eagles and the Chiefs played their hearts out, but the Kansas Chiefs narrowly beat the Philadelphia Eagles in a very high-scoring Super Bowl that, you know, poor Philly. Not that Philly are really the nicest fans. They're not really known for being
gracious,
cordial, I would say. I've never been to a Phillies game, but I have family that have, an Eagles game, and they were pretty sure they were going to get beat up by the time they left the stadium.
That's always a lovely feeling.
And so, but I do like Jalen Hurts, And I always kind of like the team that hasn't won most recently. But the Chiefs did win. Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback, added another win under his belt. Super Bowl MVP for the second time. But, you know, other people's Super Bowl, I would say, was waiting to see Rihanna's performance. And for me, I don't know, you know, I had the game on in the background because I had to work and get ready for the week, the week's worth of shows. So I had moved my external monitor down to my dining room table and had it all set up so I could watch TV and work. And so I hadn't realized throughout the entire broadcast that Fox was having issues with its audio syncing up with people's mouths.
Oh, wow.
And so I finally stopped working and moved to the couch for the halftime show so you could know where my priorities are. And immediately was like, what's going on? Because it's not, it wasn't slight. It was 3 seconds.
Oh, that's bad.
Did you, this, that, it didn't happen for you?
Okay, I watch the TV in the kitchen, which is relatively far away from me. So it's not like I'm watching, I couldn't see a lot of detail.
So it was, I mean, it made it seem like she was lip syncing, which I don't know if she was or not. I'm sure to a certain extent, there's always some backup vocals, but it seemed egregious. And so immediately I went to Twitter and tweeted about it and immediately was told this has been happening the whole broadcast. So, you know, one controversy, can't, trying to imagine being Fox, who paid billions of dollars to have this broadcast only to have audio issues. But also controversy around, you know, I feel like whenever there is a female performer at halftime who is sexual in any way, there is always chit-chat on the social medias as far as it being too sexual, too nasty. And to me, I just would like to remind people, the television does not raise your children. You raise your children. And so if you didn't know what kind of music Rihanna sings, or if you've never seen the Rude Boy music video, you maybe should have known what you were expecting. Like, did you think, because you were a little bit more sensitive than I, Jane, as far as you thought there was going to be nipples.
Oh, yeah.
Nipplage.
Oh, I fully, I mean, she has a lingerie line. I assumed that would be a center part of. Why don't do a little cross promotion while you're...
Were you offended at all by her performance?
I was confused. I didn't understand the puffy marshmallow dancers at all. Not at all.
Just their costumes?
Just the costumes. I mean, the dance moves, which happened so quickly, I wasn't sure if they were dirty or not.
Okay.
Because it went past so fast.
I mean, it was a speed round of her, you know, going on 20 years of a career, and like she played the hits.
Yeah.
And she fit them almost all in. And so I thought it was good. Obviously it was so much simpler than I feel like what we're used to seeing, because she had said there was going to be a special guest. And so I think people were waiting for Kanye to come out or waiting for Jay-Z to come out. Jay-Z, who was there, which by the way, I saw an adorable clip of Blue, their first kid, who's like a teenager now.
Oh, God, that's hard to
believe. On the field, like, looking like she's probably making a TikTok. And then Jay-Z there as like a proud dad holding the camera and getting the angles for her.
Oh, funny.
But turns out the surprise guest, was her second unborn child. That she is indeed pregnant. And that was her big announcement. And so I liked it. It was a little weird. But I like Rihanna, so I don't think it was too nasty. I think in comparison to, was it 3 years ago with J-Lo and Shakira, where everyone was in a tizzy because
of the dancing?
Of their gyrations.
I was amazed by the physicality of that and what it took to do that. And especially for J-Lo, who's in her 50s.
I mean, neither of them are. She was 50 at that point, and Shakira was definitely in her mid-40s.
Yeah. And Rihanna, I mean, granted, she's obviously pregnant with her second child, and she didn't do much choreography herself. Maybe that's why they had the 900 puffy marshmallow dancers to make up for that. But we're going to do in the third hour, in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to have a special edition game, because there was some outcry about how dirty this was. And there was a Republican lawmaker who suggested an alternative for Super Bowl entertainment. So I thought we could do some lyric comparisons. It'll be fun.
I can't wait for that game. That's going to be at 1:20 in the third hour. But the controversy I do want to talk about, and I'm going to set it up now, and we're going to talk about it after we come back from this next break, is the Jesus ads. And not because I have anything against Jesus. In fact, actually, while they felt out of place, what was crazy is the Jesus that I understand him to be, or how he is taught and what the Bible says about Jesus, is that it is these images and these ads are much more in line with the, like, socialist, refugee, anti-capitalist...
Love thy neighbor like thyself.
Jesus that's in the Bible. But the groups that are funding, that can afford to do not one, but two Super Bowl ads, not quite aligned in that mission is what they're promoting in the ads. And so, to a certain extent, I there's a part of me that's like, well, if you can afford two Super Bowl ads, which are set at, for 30 seconds, are $7 million, can you afford to pay taxes?
And another side note, what else could have been done with that $14 to $20 million to further the mission of Jesus?
Because when we come back, we will talk more about what has been found of the groups that are behind this, it's not, because it's not just these two commercials. It's a $100 million campaign that's been going on. And so, but I ask you now, what would have been the reaction if this was a Muhammad gets us campaign or a Judaism campaign? Would we have all just been like, ah, it's fine?
What about the flying spaghetti monster?
That too. 844-967-2789. That is 844-96-PARTY. What'd you think of the Jesus ads? This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, the show's about to start, but we ain't about to leave. Hey, it's one hell of a time and a song for free.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Madnair, and we are taking your reactions, because out of all the things I feel like we could have talked about, and there's certainly chatter about a lot of different things from the Super Bowl yesterday, but your reactions to the Jesus ads.
The Jesus gets us.
The Jesus gets us ads. 844-967-2789. You can call us or you can shoot us a text. If you're in a spot right now where you can't be on the phone. But my reaction, well, let's give a little bit of feedback. But my reaction is, I have nothing, especially the Jesus that they've rebranded as far as trying, because it's a recruitment campaign.
Definitely.
It's trying to bring people back to
church
and to Christianity, because since the 1990s, I mean, I was reading this morning, in the 1990s, 90% of Americans identified as Christian.
Wow.
In the 90s. In the 90s. And today, in 2022, 63% of American adults identified as Christians.
Interesting.
So that's a big drop.
It is a big
drop. I mean,
it's
also, some of it is people leaving the church entirely. Some of it is a growing population of different religions. But it's like missionaries. It's missions, trips, and it's a recruitment strategy as far as trying to get people to come back to the church. But as far as just a little bit of feedback, because you'd maybe wonder, when you think about your neighborhood church or your community church, would they have 7 million dollars lying around spent on a Super Bowl ad? But in fact, those weird Super Bowl ads were bankrolled by a group that helped overturn Roe.
Oh, well, there's a big shocker.
Yeah. The campaign is called He Gets Us, and it is supported by the Servant Foundation, which gives many millions to conservative legal advocacy.
Ah.
So the company is called He Gets Us, and they paid about $20 million to run two ads during the Super Bowl. And the ads are part of a larger $100 million media campaign. So these ads have been in the NCAA tournament, the Grammys. So in most of the big viewing events, there's been one of the 17 ads part of this campaign. And so they're diverse. Like, the diverse ads promote Christianity by presenting Jesus as an inclusive, wrongly judged figure committed to social justice, which, if you read the Bible, he was.
New Testament.
But the group's paying for them. I don't know if they share. I don't know if they share that perspective. And so the group is a subsidiary of a Kansas-based group called the Servant Foundation, which we just said. And that group has donated more than $50 million.
Wow.
To the Alliance Defending Freedom between 2018 and 2020. And the Alliance Defending Freedom is a conservative Christian legal advocacy group that helped get Roe overturned.
Okay, I've been away from the Bible for a long time, but I was raised Catholic and I had 7 years of Catholic school. Jesus loved people who collected taxes. He was so pro. I mean, it's so interesting.
So interesting.
So
right?
So interesting.
So this is a group that worked with Mississippi lawmakers to draft the law at the heart of Dobbs versus Jackson. And their lawyers also argued the case before justices at the Supreme Court that would have been in 2021 when the ruling came down last year. But this is a group that has been designated an anti-LGBTQ+ hate group by Southern Poverty Law Center. And it's the group that is also working to overturn Colorado's anti-discrimination law by representing a web designer who refuses to make wedding websites for same-sex couples. So that's the same group. And it's also the group that is behind an effort before a Texas federal court to end FDA approval of medication prescribed to end pregnancy. So they're busy.
They are busy.
They're busy.
That, you know, just to throw this out there, it almost feels like a bait and switch, doesn't it?
I know.
Huh.
I know.
Huh.
It is funny because then they did get some backlash from some of their own. I guess Charlie Kirk didn't like the ads. He felt like the ads were giving in to the woke mob by rebranding Jesus in this way.
Yeah, definitely. Charlie, you come up with ads about how Jesus really hated everybody who wasn't like him.
I love how this is rebranding Jesus and that the white version of Jesus isn't the rebranded one. It's like, we all know that Jesus wasn't white, right?
I really want to hear Charlie Kirk's pro-Jesus ad.
So I just come back. I mean, granted, it's not just a church that is funding this. So I'm sure to a certain extent they've figured out the legal loopholes as far as why this is fine. But it's just the amount of money that is going to things like this when you are doing your donations to your church and the way it goes back up to buy Super Bowl ads.
Huh.
is interesting.
It is.
And furthermore, I just, and granted, like we said, there's 63, a majority of Americans still identify as Christian. And even beyond that majority, I think so many of us are conditioned to be very, it's fine when we see Christian ideology and symbols because it is a, it's been a majority Christian nation for so long. So I'm just saying, if it's a free market and anyone can buy an ad, who would have just lost their mind had it been a Judaism ad or an Islam ad, right?
I'm going to contact the Pastafarians. There's an ad to be made there.
Especially when you're high.
Well, with a colander on your head.
All right, when we come back, Mr. John Russell is going to be here to talk about the train derailment and give us a firsthand report of what happened. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. All right, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And last week, a train carrying hazardous materials went off the tracks in East Palestine, Ohio. It burst into flames and stoked fears of a potential explosion. And now authorities have assured evacuated residents that it's safe to return to their town, which I don't know if anyone's buying that because that feels like a pretty clean, a pretty quick cleanup. But I thought I would invite my friend of the show, John Russell, who did some stealth on-site reporting during the press conference that was there last week. He's an Upper Ohio Valley guy. He also is the author of The Holler, which is an Appalachian-based independent media for fed-up working-class people. And he's back on the show to tell us about what's actually going on. Welcome back, John Russell.
Well, hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
So I saw this because we are TikTok friends, and I think I had finished my show at some point last week and was scrolling through and saw that you were doing a live, like a TikTok live of the press conference. And I highly recommend going to read his newsletter from this week, The Holler, of his coverage of this, because you have an interesting perspective, because this is your, not that you're from East Palestine, but like, this is your area, right?
Yeah, if you grew up in a rural area, you kind of know the deal here. I grew up in a town 20 miles away, same county, Wellsville, East Palestine. I went up there a lot. You get to know in these small rural counties a lot of people from different high schools. Y'all hang out at the county fair. Mm-hmm. That's how I knew people in East Palestine. And that's how I got into the press conference. I went up there and the major roads were blocked off by the cops. But when you're from there, you can sneak in the back way. So that's what I did and took TikTok along with me.
So besides the little recap I just gave, what happened?
Yeah, so obviously a train derailment with a catastrophic explosion and release of the chemicals that were being carried there. There has been a lot of investigation, and rightly so, into the chemicals that were released, the long-term effects of those, where they're all going to go. Obviously, at the press conference, there was an arrest of a reporter that was very brazen. But the angle that I'm really taking in The Holler and asking about locally is the role that excess profit-seeking on behalf of the rail carriers might have played in a mechanical failure. I think that's one, an angle that needs to be looked at a lot more in the coverage of the incident.
Because how, in your purview, how does this tie back to the railroad strikers or the railroad workers and their squashed strike from last year?
It's very interconnected. So I think what people, listeners, should add to this, their consciousness of this story and should look up, is a corporate practice by the railroads, which is called precision scheduled railroading. What that is basically cutting everything to make a lot of money. PSR has been implemented by the major railroads. It means longer trains, less staff on those trains, for dispatch systems that have to monitor emergencies on trains and braking failures on trains. There's less people monitoring more trains for that. There are less people performing routine maintenance on cars. If you follow the story at all, you'll know it was an axle failure that caused this derailment. There's also been some talk about braking system management and the overworked dispatchers that could respond to this kind of situation. But how this ties back to the rail strike is workers basically called this months ago. I was talking to a leader of one of the major rail unions and a 22-year rail veteran himself 7 weeks before this derailment, who said, these derailments are picking up because less maintenance is being done for the sake of making more profit. And what he said at the time before this disaster, weeks before it, was that it was only a matter of time until these profit-seeking measures that are cutting back on maintenance result in some kind of catastrophe. And weeks later, here we are.
Oh, that's so infuriating. But I think it's, you know, it was hard in reading your report on this, or your reporting on this in your newsletter. It was also, I couldn't help but think of, this is, stay with me here. Because on the 80 for Brady press tour, Jane Fonda got in some controversy because she said there would be no like climate crisis if there wasn't racism. And she goes on to say, if there wasn't race, like where would they put the poison? Because they're not going to put it in Bel Air. And so thinking about what you were writing, as far as this is not the first time this has happened and gone fairly underreported in Ohio, and Ohio is so much opening its doors for this to happen, to basically just exploit people in your neck of the woods in upper, like the upper valley of Ohio, to be exposed to the poison and being like, because they can't fight back.
You nailed it. If you don't have money, you get all the stuff that richer communities don't want in their backyards. And that's been the story of where I live, the Ohio Valley, and where this derailment happened. Unfortunately, it's not a unique thing. It's another addition to the roster of industrial tragedy that happens here. And you're correct in saying that usually those tragedies coincide with some of the poorest communities. And that's definitely the case here. I think, you know, another thing is that this really cuts across a lot of social identities. It cuts across race. You can be any race in this valley, but what we all are is relatively poor. And because of that, we have to deal with the negative consequences of industry. And frankly, this playbook, which is happening in real time, you know, it happens a lot that a large company makes a lot of profit doing things the quick and dirty way. They stick communities with the bag. And that is the playbook that runs business in America that we're seeing happen right here. I mean, Norfolk Southern, in exchange for blowing up a train full of hazardous chemicals in this community, offered a hilariously low sum for compensation, $25,000. To the town. So you see this too. I want to draw a parallel. This region was impacted massively by opioids. And there again, you see companies making a ton of money, killing a lot of folks who are addicted to their product. Nobody going to jail because of that, and only fines levied upon these companies, which really amount to just the cost of doing business. And I think that's we're going to see a similar playbook here.
We're talking to John Russell, who is the author of The Holler and is also an Upper Ohio Valley guy. And so the derailment that happened in East Palestine last week in Ohio happened in his backyard. And so having a conversation with an independent media guy, because the mainstream media isn't really covering this in the same way as far as this being a preventable, this being preventable, period, right?
Yeah, big time. And here's another angle to really look into here. Wall Street has its fingers in every sector of the economy. So I want you, we started this with a talk about that press conference where I was live on TikTok. I'll do some more. If you read the newsletter, you'll see this angle in there, and I'm going to develop this a little bit. But to generalize, the press outlets that were covering this disaster, many of them, were owned by the same private equity firms that also have significant shares in Norfolk Southern. So major Wall Street capital firms have been rolling up local news and also railroads. So when a train explodes in a town, the local news that comes to cover the train, both the news that's reporting on the disaster and the company that caused the disaster are significantly owned by private equity and Wall Street. And both of them are in pursuit of excess profits, which is one of the factors here, which, you know, why you're seeing the press talk about, well, how much cancer are we going to get from this and when, instead of asking, what could the corporate practice of cutting back on staff safety and maintenance have had to do with why this derailed in the first place? I think that's an angle we'll cover in the holler too.
And John, from what I understand too, there has been an immense amount of lobbying from the rail industry and from Wall Street across administrations about not pursuing some of these additional safety measures, especially when it comes to brakes and things like that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is kind of a perfect storm of a failure of regulation, and again, profit seeking by the largest companies, which are owned by the largest private equity firms. This is, you got me on my still, I lost my train of thought there. Go back to the question if you can.
Again, just that there has been, this goes across administrations. This is not a Republican administration. This is not a Democratic administration. This kind of lobbying and pressure to back off of more regulations for this industry is to blame across the political spectrum.
That's for sure. So when you saw the floodgates of money in politics open, it really was both parties that took it. So and, you know, large businesses are going to bet on both red and black. They're going to bet on red and blue in this instance so that they have an audience with whoever wins here. And what I'd really like to see from this and what I've been surprised by is the lack of response from Democrats on this. I mean, we are supposed to be the party of the working class here. When a train derails and it has a lot to do with the corporate practices in maintenance of one of these large industries you're supposed to regulate, I want to see the party on the ground here fighting the companies that are making life hard in a town like East Palestine. If you want to regain your base, then you have to show up to places like this. And I've been disappointed so far by the lack of folks showing up to make this an issue.
What has been the talking points that have come down from whether it's the congressmen, senators, state legislators, the governor? Has it been kind of in lockstep with what the media has been saying as far as this is a tragedy, but not actually talking about any kind of accountability?
Yeah, and even worse than that, I mean, our congressman here, Bill Johnson, represents Ohio's 6th District, has not said anything.
What?
About this. I mean, this is a United States congressional representative, hasn't said a word about this. So it's been hopelessly silent from a lot of the officials. And unfortunately, the problem here, when local papers have died off, Oftentimes, the first news that makes it out, the facts really have to run through a gauntlet of influence. And in initial disasters like this, it's usually the company that has the most knowledge and power to influence the direction of the press coverage.
So
say that again.
So they're saying people can go back. Is it possible that they actually cleaned it up that quickly, that it is safe for people to go back?
These are my words. I would say no.
Yeah.
Whenever you look back at the history of industrial disasters like this, the worst of the consequences take years and years and years to show up. And this is a call to anybody listening, if they're, you know, citizen scientists, university people who want to help out with this. There really needs to be monitoring done over the long term and follow up and accountability over years and years and years. You know, the toothpaste will not go back in the tube with this, but there should be a long-term accountability project.
Oh, well, I wish we could keep you longer, but I know that you're going to continue covering this on The Holler, which, where can people find all of your media and all the good work that you do independently?
Yep, the videos will be on social media. That's at Hey John Russell, two S's, two L's. There you go. And then The Holler is the newsletter. We go a little bit more in depth there including a 20-minute interview with a 22-year railroad veteran about some of these things. That'll be in the newsletter. That is theholler.co, the Holler Ohio Valley.
And we'll tweet all that out from our social media and put it in our show notes today. John Russell, thank you for taking time to talk about this with us. As it develops, please come back and keep us informed, because it doesn't necessarily seem that other news outlets will do it justice the way that you are trying to do it justice. So thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for spreading the word. Look forward to talking more.
All right. Well, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, winners and losers, Super Bowl commercial edition with Dusty Weiss. We'll be right back.
Your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's an oyster with two tickets to that thing you love. Look again. The tickets are now diamonds. Anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
I'm on a horse. God, that was
harkening back to a simpler time in advertising.
Yes.
When commercials could just be awesome.
And that was an awesome commercial. All right, well, we're going to jump right into it. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, with Jane Matinair. And our guest for this segment is Dusty Weiss, who is host of the Lead Balloon podcast and president of PodCamp Media, a podcast production company for brands in Milwaukee. And here he is here to tell us his winners and losers of Super Bowl commercials from yesterday. So I'm going to hand it off right to you.
Kristen, Jane, thanks for having me again. I think as a football fan, I could speak on behalf of all football fans everywhere and say I was just relieved to have a game for once that was more exciting than the commercials were.
Indeed.
But do have a couple of broad takeaways here from the advertising game within the game last night. And I think the biggest takeaway, first and foremost, is the complete absence of any cryptocurrency ads.
I know.
The silence was deafening. Last year, there were 4 crypto ads that ran during the Super Bowl, and then a whole bunch of stuff on the field, too. They called it the Crypto Bowl. Larry David, Steph Curry, Tom Brady, LeBron James, all these people let their names get used by these companies. And I think that we're left to conclude, based on the events of the past year and the absence of any crypto advertising last night, that maybe fortune doesn't favor the brave so much. But if there's a sucker born every minute, that means that there's at least 525,600 new suckers this year. And I would imagine that they had their phones out more than once. You'll remember one of the big sensations during last year's Super Bowl was Coinbase's ad that was just a floating QR code that moved around the screen.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, as we tend to see whenever something succeeds one year, everybody dogpiles onto the trend the next year. And we saw tons of QR codes. They were all, frankly, terrible and annoying. But none was worse than this 30-second anime fever dream where two sword-waving cartoons attack a treasure box for some reason and told us next to nothing about the product that they were hawking.
Free digital collectible. Scan now.
Oh, cool. I get an NFT. That's great. I don't know what's worse, the fact that the brains behind Digi Daigaku chose to spend $6.5 million to air this thing, or that people who scanned that QR code are now already trying to sell these NFTs for $700 online right now. But if I'm looking for a bright side in all of this, it is that if we're heading for a good old-fashioned recession like they say we are, right now, that ought to put the final nail in the coffin when people no longer have the disposable income for this kind of nonsense. But another loser that I want to highlight before we move on to a little more positive spin here is this spot for online shopping app Temu.
I'm shopping like a billionaire. I'm shopping like a billionaire. Let's go. Temu.
So it's colorful, it's eye-catching, it's obnoxiously earwormy, and they ran it four times, once in the first half, once in the second half, and then twice in the post-game. And from that, we can only deduce that we're going to be bombarded by this for the rest of the year. But it's 2023, it's not 2016, and I don't know, I don't think you could just launch a new app with a nonsensical name using a Super Bowl commercial and expect it to stick around. I mean, let's talk about Yik Yak, Quibi, Blippi, Flibbity Flop, Boo Boo.
Quibi was the short form 10-minute episodes, right?
And it's gone.
And it's gone.
It's all gone.
I remember I was still living in LA when that was like about to launch, and it was the big deal. And then it launched basically during the pandemic, and everyone was like, TikTok.
I want to relaunch it just for the name. We got to be able to use that somewhere.
It's these nonsensical brand names for apps. I think it's a flash in the pan thing, and most of them have all burned out, and frankly, I don't expect Temu to be around once their ad budget runs out too much. But the second thing about Temu that's a little more sinister is that I did the research into it. This is actually a Chinese e-retailer that's trying to make inroads into America. And, you know, our airspace is already cluttered up with spy balloons right now. Now they're cluttering up our Super Bowl advertising, too. I don't see it panning out for them. But I did want to highlight a few brands with local ties. And the first is Molson Coors, formerly Miller Coors. But this is the first time that they've aired a Super Bowl ad in 30 years.
Yep.
And it featured two guys fighting over whether it was a Coors commercial or a Miller commercial.
Coors commercial, Miller commercial.
Actually, it's a Blue Moon commercial.
Now, on the one hand, all right, it's kind of cute. Way to go. But we all know that Miller, Coors, and Blue Moon are all owned by the same company. But I also want to point out the bar is pretty high for beer ads, and I don't know if any of us are going to be talking about this one in a month. So
yeah, I would agree
I thought
with
it was
that.
A miss.
It was kind of for being the first time because it was a first time. This was the year that Anheuser-Busch basically stopped having exclusive rights, and so it was the first time other beer companies could even have commercials. And you think they were going to spend the money to do it, make a little bit more memorable?
I would think so. I don't know. I'm going to be unpopular for saying that. So. I'll move on. I do have to point out one of my favorites of the night was, this is actually my third favorite, the Google Pixel ad with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Amy Schumer. It opens up saying, for years, our phones have captured our memories. Now it's time to fix them.
I can erase my exes.
And then you see a family erasing an old guy in a Speedo from their beach photo. You've got Amy Schumer erasing her exes. And then Giannis jumps in.
Giannis, what about that dunk in the third quarter?
What dunk?
Slayed me. Absolutely fell about the place. Loved it. But before we round out the top three, I do want to give an honorable mention.
Just a warning, we may not have time for the top three because we got to go at 11:58.
All right. Did you see the Nicolet Law commercial, though?
I think I might have missed that one. I feel like my top one was Ben Affleck in serving coffee.
Oh, Ben Affleck with coffee. That was a good one. But Nicolet Law is a local law firm that bought a local spot right at the end. And I think they're really coming for David Gruber as far as being the most TV advertised. So go back and check that one out. That's worth it. But for me, it was a photo finish at the end. My number two is the dog food commercial for Farmer's Dog. This one just slayed me.
Hey, man.
You get to watch this little girl grow up with her chocolate lab puppy as she goes off to college, gets married, starts a family, and I'm sorry, but you're not allowed to make me cry on a Monday morning. And my big winner for the night, Michelob Ultra, upstaging both Bud Light and Molson Coors with this lovingly crafted Caddyshack tribute with Serena Williams playing golf against Brian Cox, who plays Logan Roy on Succession. And we also get to see Tony Romo do his best Bill Murray impression.
Dusty, I'm going to have to let you go, unfortunately. But thank you so much for joining us today. We will post all of this, and we will also post links for the Lead Balloon, which has just got nominated. Thank you for joining us, and we'll have you back soon.
Good times.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.